हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
So Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 5, The Glories of Lord Nityananda Balaram. Okay, page 29. Text 225. Without a doubt, he is directly the son of the king of Raja. Only a fool considers him a statue. For that offense, he cannot be liberated. Rather, he will fall into a terrible hellish condition. What more can I say? Srila Prabhupada. In his Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami has stated that those who are actually very serious about devotional service do not differentiate between the form of the Lord made of clay, metal, stone, or wood, and the original form of the Lord. In the material world, a person and his photograph, picture, or statue are different. But the statue of Lord Krishna and Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are non-different, because the Lord is absolute. What we call stone, wood, and metal are energies of the Supreme Lord, and energies are never separate from the energetic. As we have several times explained, no one can separate the sunshine energy from the energetic sun. Therefore, material energy may appear separate from the Lord, but transcendentally it is non-different from the Lord. The Lord can appear anywhere and everywhere because his diverse energies are distributed everywhere like sunshine. We should therefore understand whatever we see to be the energy of the Supreme Lord, and should not differentiate between the Lord and his archer form made of clay, metal, wood, or paint. Even if one does not develop this consciousness, one should accept it theoretically from the instruction of the spiritual master, and should worship the Archamurti, or form of the Lord, in the temple as non-different from the Lord. 227. Therefore, who can describe the mercy of the lotus feet of him, Lord Nityananda, by whom I have attained the shelter of this Lord Govinda? All the groups of Vaishnavas who live in Vrindavan are absorbed in chanting the all-auspicious name of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are the life and soul of those Vaishnavas who do not know anything but devotional service to Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. The dust and shade of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas have been granted to this fallen soul by the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda said, "In Vrindavan, all things are possible." End quote. Here I have explained his brief statement in detail. I have attained all this by coming to Vrindavan, and this was made possible by the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Srila Prabhupada. All the inhabitants of Vrindavan are Vaishnavas. They are all auspicious because somehow or other they always chant the holy name of Krishna, even though some of them do not strictly follow the rules and regulations of devotional service. On the whole, they are devotees of Krishna and chant his name directly or indirectly, purposely or without purpose. Even when they pass on the street, they are fortunate enough to exchange greetings by saying the name of Radha or Krishna. Thus, directly or indirectly, they are auspicious. The present-day city of Vrindavan has been established by the Gaudiya Vaishnava since the six Goswamis went there and directed the construction of their different temples. Of all the temples in Vrindavan, 90% belong to the Gaudiya Vaishnava sect, the followers of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda, and seven temples are very famous. The inhabitants of Vrindavan do not know anything but the worship of Radha and Krishna. In recent years, some unscrupulous so-called priests known as caste Goswamis have introduced the worships of demigods privately, but no genuine and rigid Vaishnavas participate in this. Those who are serious about the Vaishnava method of devotional activities do not take part in such worship of demigods. I have described my own story without reservations. the attributes of Lord Nityananda, making me like a madman, force me to write these things. The glories of Lord Nityananda's transcendental attributes are unfathomable. Even Lord Sesha, with his thousands of mouths, cannot find a limit. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishnadas, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. Conclusion. Nityananda Prabhu is the original Sankarsana. Revealed knowledge may in the beginning be unbelievable because of our paradoxical desire to verify everything with our tiny brains. But the speculative means of attaining knowledge is always imperfect. That is, as we discussed before, is you can't know what's up, above, you know, what's beyond. So, technically speaking, you can't follow the deductive method because you're starting from the supreme and coming down. They don't know that. So there's always going to be inductive. And the difficulty is that their method of taking what their position and themselves and then trying to extrapolate to get to the supreme, then how successful that will be. That's the reason we have that story of the Professor Frog. But, you know, the ocean is at 10 times as big as my well, you know, like that. He can only go by what he has. So he can't go beyond. So it sounds unbelievable compared to our position, but that's the meaning of Krishna's position. So it's only through revealed knowledge. Okay. The personality of Godhead. What? Oh, the mosquitoes. Sorry? Oh, maybe bring the smoke over here in the middle or something. Oh, then you'll get it. he's quite good. Yeah. No, it's fine. It's fine.
No,
okay.
No, I can
cover
in three directions. It takes some time.
Yeah.
Three pots.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's waiting for it to start, and then he'll distribute it.
So I'll just get five.
Is it staying inside though? It's not going out. It seems to be going out.
After it gets bigger, then I get more batteries get burned.
Okay.
And then take these batteries.
I put in there. Oh, okay.
I have a question from earlier. We were talking about the deductive and inductive.
Yes.
So I was under the impression that deductive reasoning was sort of like neti-neti. You start with everything you have, and then you... You take away things that you think aren't actually true.
Yes.
Is that basically what it is?
Not really.
Not
deductive.
Really.
It's from whole to the part. Means you understand the whole, like big concept of whatever it is, if it's God or anything, and then you go to the part, you know, break it into the parts. And inductive is taking the part and then trying to reach the whole.
Whole, yeah. So
but it's not, yes. Obviously, it's not happening.
So you can basically say the descending and the ascending.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like that. So the ascending is what they'll work with. They may start with their concept of things. And they're saying the niti-niti, neti-neti, but they're starting with themselves and what they know. So even and from that, then the idea is by taking out everything, then I'll end up with the Supreme.
Right.
So it's not that they're starting with the Supreme. They're starting with something else. Okay,
right.
God is not this table. He's also not, you know, this rug here.
Yes.
And that. And so they have to go through things in their experience. And then
right.
Supposedly once they do that, then there'll be nothing left.
Right.
But, you know, they have to get through 8,400,000 species, you know, all like that. So it's going to take them a while.
Right.
It's the same concept like Babylon. You know, they were trying to build, you know, from down to up.
Up, yes.
But in actuality, it didn't happen.
Yeah. Also, you have, yes, the same. It didn't happen. Or I think Robin also tried to build something like that. That also didn't work. So if it didn't work for Robin, why will it work for these other people?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like a... If Hiranyakashipu couldn't kill Vishnu, then how is Ravana going to? You know, Hiranyakashipu is, you know, bigger. The personality of Godhead, known as Sri Balaram in Krishna Loka, is the original Sankarsana. And from this Sankarsana expands another Sankarsana, called Mahasankarsana, who resides in one of the Vaikuntha planets. By his internal potency, Mahasankarsana maintains the transcendental existence of all the planets in the spiritual sky. where all the living beings are eternally liberated souls. In the causal ocean is Mahavishnu, the original Purusha expansion from Sankarsana. Mahavishnu places his glance over the material energy, and by a reflection of his transcendental body, he amalgamates himself within the material elements. As the source of the material elements, the material energy is known as Pradhan, and as the source of the manifestations of the material energy is known as Maya. Right? So you have the elements are coming from Maya, from Pradhan, and then the elements are put together in forms here, and that's also made from Maya, right? Because they're put together according to the modes. She is empowered to make the cosmic manifestation by the glance of Mahavishnu. This chapter describes so just the glance of Mahavishnu, and he's an expansion of Balaram. So that's the whole point, to show the glories of Lord Nityananda. This chapter describes two Swetadweeps, one in the abode of Krishna, and the other in the ocean of milk in every universe. The Swetadweep in the abode of Krishna is identical with Vrindavan Dham, which is the place where Krishna appears himself to display his loving pastimes. And the Swetadweep within every universe is the Sesha form of Godhead who serves Vishnu. Lord Baladev in Krishna Loka is Nityananda Prabhu. Therefore, Nityananda Prabhu is the original Sankarsana, and Mahasankarsana and his expansions, as the Purushas in the universes, are plenary expansions of Nityananda Prabhu. And so the point is we should know who he is. We should appreciate. Yes? So chapter 6. The glories of Sri Advaitacharya, Pratitya. Advaitacharya is another form of Mahavishnu. Adhyaya Prakashika. The sixth chapter considers the truth of Advaitacharya. He is an incarnation of Mahavishnu. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 17:319. For one who does not understand the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his diverse energies, because of not knowing the relationship between the source of the energies and the energies themselves, there is always a chance of error. Therefore, one should hear submissively from authorities. Right? So it has to descend. But it's not speculative. Right? It means we're going to, what we've heard, we're going to try to apply that in our life. So we're still using that principle of Anuman. But it's based on authority, and we know what we're trying to get from it. So it's not like speculation where you actually don't know what's there, and then you just put things together and try to come up with something. Okay. The truth of Advaitacharya has been described in two verses. It is said that material nature has two features, namely the material cause and the efficient cause. The efficient causal activities are caused by Mahavishnu, and the material causal activities are caused by another form of Mahavishnu known as Advaita. That Advaita, the superintendent of the cosmic manifestation, has descended in the form of Advaitacharya to associate with Lord Chaitanya. When he is addressed as the servant of Lord Chaitanya, his glories are magnified because unless one is invigorated by the mentality of servitorship, one cannot understand the mellows derived from the devotional service of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Shloka Anusharanam. Verses 1 to 120. Commentaries on verses 12 and 13. Okay. I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Advaitacharya, whose activities are all wonderful. By his mercy, even a foolish person can describe his characteristics. All glories to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Nityananda. All glories to Advaitacharya. And all glories to all the devotees of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In five verses, I have described the principle of Lord Nityananda. Then, in the following two verses, I describe the glories of Sri Advaitacharya. Lord Advaitacharya is the incarnation of Mahavishnu, whose main function is to create the cosmic world through the actions of Maya. Verse 12 of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because he is non-different from Hari, the Supreme Lord, he is called Advaita. And because he propagates the cult of devotion, he is called Acharya. He is the Lord and the incarnation of the Lord's devotee. Therefore, I take shelter of him. Verse 13 of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sri Advaita Acharya is indeed directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. His glory is beyond the conception of ordinary living beings. Mahavishnu performs all the functions for the creation of the universe. Sri Advaita Acharya is his direct incarnation. That Purusha creates and maintains with his external energy. He creates innumerable universes in his pastimes. By his will, he manifests himself in unlimited forms, in which he enters each and every universe. Sri Advaita Acharya is a plenary part of that Purusha, and so is non-different from him. Indeed, Sri Advaita Acharya is not separate, but is another form of that Purusha. He, Advaita Acharya, helps in the pastimes of the Purusha, with those with whose material energy and by whose will he creates innumerable universes. Being a reservoir of all auspicious attributes, Sri Advaita Acharya is all auspicious for the world. His characteristics, activity, and name are always auspicious. Srila Prabhupada. Sri Advaita Prabhu, who is an incarnation of Mahavishnu, is an Acharya or teacher. All his activities and all the other activities of Vishnu are auspicious. Anyone who can view the all auspiciousness in the pastimes of Lord Vishnu also becomes auspicious simultaneously. Therefore, since Lord Vishnu is the fountainhead of auspiciousness, anyone who is attracted by the devotional service of Lord Vishnu can render the greatest service to human society. That means creating actual auspiciousness. Rejected persons of the material world who refuse to understand pure devotional service as the eternal function of the living entity and as actual liberation of the living being from conditioned life become bereft of all devotional service because of their poor fund of knowledge. In the teachings of Advaita Acharya, there is no question of fruit of activities or impersonal liberation. Bewildered by the spell of material energy, however, persons who could not understand that Advaita Prabhu is non-different from Vishnu wanted to follow him with their impersonal conceptions, right? Because so you have two groups like this. The attempt of Advaita Prabhu to punish them is also auspicious. Lord Vishnu and his activities can bestow all good fortune, directly and indirectly. In other words, being favored by Lord Vishnu and being punished by Lord Vishnu are one and the same, because all the activities of Vishnu are absolute. According to some, Mangala was another name of Advaita Prabhu. As the causal incarnation, or Lord Vishnu's incarnation for a particular occasion, he is a supply agent or ingredient in material nature. However, he is never to be considered material. All his activities are spiritual. Anyone who hears about and glorifies him becomes glorified himself. For such activities are free from all kinds of misfortune. One should not invest any material contamination or impersonalism in the Vishnu form. Everyone should try to understand the real identity of Lord Vishnu, for by such knowledge one can attain the highest stage of perfection. Mahavishnu, text 13. Mahavishnu creates the entire material world with millions of his parts, energies, and incarnations. Just as the... Because also all his energies are there. He expands himself as unlimited incarnations, entering in each universe and entering as and expanding as Kiradaksha Vishnu. So all this is all going on from him. Just as the external energy consists of two parts, the efficient cause, Nimitta, and the material cause, Upadana. So, okay, Nimitta means what's going on now. Is that the... Or he said the efficient. Okay, and the material cause, upadana, means the ingredients. Okay, so the ingredients and then how the ingredients are turned into things. So that's the efficient, and that's the material. Maya being the efficient cause and pradhan, the material cause. So Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, assumes two forms to create the material world with the efficient and material causes. Lord Vishnu himself is the efficient, Nimitta, cause of the material world. And Lord Narayana, in the form of Sri Advaita, is the material cause, Upadana. Lord Vishnu, in his efficient aspect, glances over the material energy, and Sri Advaita, as the material cause, creates the material world. Although the Shankya philosophy accepts that the material ingredients are the cause, the creation of the world never arises from dead matter. The Lord infuses the material ingredients with his own creative potency. Then, by the power of the Lord, creation takes place. So, that aspect of him being Mahavishnu and having expanded and all that, and then he's the, how do you say, the efficient net, he is glancing over the material energy, so it's by his potency that things are happening. But at the same time, he is the source of that material energy. So he's the source of its working and on all the energies that it functions with. Does that make sense? So just like Maya is the elements themselves, these pradhan has all the elements that everything is made from, and then there's the making of it. So in the same way, is then the Lord has these features of how he glances, and that then is creating. But at the same time, he's the ingredients that make everything. He's the source of everything that comes, because he's the source of Maya. He's the source of the potency. He's the source of pradhan. Does that make sense? Yes.
So can we say that Advaita Acharya is equal to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu?
And here it seems to be putting him on the level of Mahavishnu, because Mahavishnu is doing both these things. Then Garbhodakshaya within the universe will be, because just like you see within the universe, then there's the supply of all the things, and then there's the making it happen as Kiradakshaya. So,
yeah.
So it's these two aspects of the Lord. Then when we just talk about him as, you know, Vishnu, and he's the source of all things and everything like that, that's the aspect is there, but then when he glances and makes everything happen, that's the specialness of Garbhodakshaya. I mean, Karanodakshaya.
Yeah.
Like that. But he's still the source of everything and the basis of everything, and from whom all the energies are coming, all the energies are transforming, everything is being able to be created. That makes sense? Yeah. So it seems he's taking these two aspects of the Lord. And so that's what Advaita Acharya is. So he's a part of that. His Mahavishnu himself is there, and then the creative aspect and all that is just part of what he does. So, yeah.
This efficient cause, it is like the primordial creation.
It seems to, you kind of get the ideas that it has that aspect, but the two seem to, means the simplest is just, there's the elements it's made out of, and then what's made from that.
Yes.
Right? And what's made from that will be, that's what bewilders the living entities. That's the Jiva Maya. Means, because we don't make something, no one's bewildered. Right? Like if we go to the factory and all the ingredients are there, not much bewilderment. But then when they've made the thing, then that's where we get attracted. So that point of what's made and we're attracted to that, then that's the one. And then the other is then all the things and just it's how it's all made. It's just like you'll see, just like say, okay, we take the pot. So the pot has a potency. Right? It means that the pot is there and it has that potency to do the things. Right? So you have that metaphysical thing like that. But at the same time, as the pot has ingredients it's made from. So it's, in this case, it's made from copper, from earth. Right? So that then is able to express. From that, you can appreciate the potency of the pot to hold water. So in other words, the potency of the pot to hold the water, and that we are coming in contact with this pot and all that, and that whole interaction we may have, that's Mahavishnu, or Narayan, or Mahavishnu. And then that, it's there in this energy that can take this form. That's Advaita Acharya. Right? In other words, it would be kind of like what we've been discussing most of the time is the primary and secondary aspect.
Yes.
Does that make sense? But at the same time, they seem to have their commonalities, because you're talking about one thing, but it has both these aspects. So it's that you're supplying the ingredients. It would be like, as the efficient cause, you know, Maya bewilders everybody and through those potencies and all that, that's what Mahavishnu is doing. But she's also Pradhan, she's supplying all the ingredients, you know, but that potency, where do those ingredients come from? And how those can become everything, that's Mahav, that's a great acharya, that's Narayan.
Yes. Yes. So it's before.
It's the one is the dynamic that's making it happen, the other is the what it's made out of. You know, it means that clay is there. So that's the ingredients. And then you can take the clay and make a pot.
Yes.
So that you have a pot, you have the things that pots can do. That principle, the pot, the potency to make the pot, all that, then that's one thing. And then the power of clay, that it can be made into pots and all, that's another thing.
Yes.
So the clay seems to be the origin of the clay, that's Advaitacharya, and that it can be made into all these things and is being done. You know, it's being made into all this, and that's what's controlling the living entities. And that is Mahavishnu. Seven things. Seems to be how the distinction is being made here. Yes.
Also, what's being brought out eventually will be, so the efficient cause was obviously Lord Chaitanya's reason for coming here to taste the Mudra Srimata Radharani.
Okay.
But the material cause was Advaitacharya offering the Tulsi leaf and Ganges water and then crying out for him to come because of the state of the Kali Yuga.
Okay.
So also that'll come out.
Okay. Another aspect. So when you have some principle like this, then from that you can get so many things. Like that. What's that? Yeah. Yeah, so what everything is made out of is one thing. And its potency and how that attracts you and bewilders you, that's the other.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So these are the two aspects. So, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah?
I guess while we read,
it'll become more clear.
It will be a reality, because now it's unclear actually.
Okay.
Especially we know also some call him Sadashiva, which is like,
yes, but then who the, that's the glance.
Yeah.
And then that goes into what?
The glance?
Yes.
Well, his glance at Rama Devi.
Yes.
And then,
but that's at her transformation as Maya.
Yeah.
And so that what happens when that glance enters?
Then it's Shiva.
No, yes. But then what happens to?
Well, she transforms.
Yes. So then all the ingredients come out.
Yeah.
You know. So then you'll have the Avyakta.
Right.
But the point is unless Krishna then enters that, you can't make anything from it.
Yeah.
So then that way he's the efficient cause. But at the same time is his energies are non-different, so he is the ingredient cause. You understand? So dealing with that ingredient aspect, that's specifically what do you call it? That's that aspect of Sadashiva. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, so the point is they're both non-different, but it's two aspects of it. You know, and then he's carrying that false ego, so that's what controls everything. So you'll see in the prayers, like we were discussing today, that in the Hiranyagarbha Shukta, which is about Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, the prayers, if you didn't know, you'd think they're about Lord Shiva. Because he's controlling everything in this aspect in that kind of in that mood, because he's the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. So the point is whatever is controlled by ignorance is destroyed. Right? So the living entities, then their consciousness in that being polluted, then they take on all these forms and everything in the material world that are all being destroyed. So all governed by that which will be destroyed. It remains because Vishnu is maintaining. He's providing the ingredients. But the maintenance is, you have the aspect of the ingredients are there, but they're always transforming. So it's not that they remain in one form. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But at the same time, as there are the forms that the Lord made to carry out this control of the living entity. You know, the 14 planetary systems, the species of life, the different situations that are possible. You know, like, you know, how you say coastline, you know, inside, valleys, mountains, you know, all these different things. But that's all being made from ingredients. So in other words, he glances, and then from that you get all the ingredients. But then he has to enter those ingredients to make it to be able to do something. So that's that one fine point in between. Because generally we just hear the one and it goes through. But if you remember, Markandeya Rishi was talking about, or was it Markandeya? Yeah. Or Maitreya? Somebody with an N. Right? So then they were talking about, because Vidura spoke to?
Maitreya.
So then Maitreya is explaining that you have that original aspect, and then because he wanted to know how the Lord was involved all the way through. Because we just hear, you know, he started the whole thing, we're comfortable. But Vidura wanted to know how all the way through. So his glance, then all the 24 elements come out, but the primordial demigods can't work with it. Because it won't hold together. Because it's just ingredients. So now Krishna is the nimitta, right? The efficient cause. Now it works, and now it makes it work. So the cause is there. You have the ingredient cause, but the efficient is what makes it work. Does that make sense? So that ingredient cause, that's the feature of Advaitacharya. And the efficient cause, that's the feature of Vishnu. Does that make sense?
So then the Purusha Sutta will be describing both the material and the efficient cause.
Yes. Because it has to deal with all these things come, and then at the same time all these things are created and all that. It's basically talking about that primary creation. But you already have those, because even if you're not specifically mentioning the ingredients, it's without the ingredients, how would you make something? So if all the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, all the Varnas come out, all this and that, but then there had to be ingredients for what that's made from. You know, so it's like the Lord is, Advaitacharya is calling, and so that's there, but then what you're going to do with that, that's then the other side, the efficient aspect.
Function.
Yes. You know, so we can see is that of that. That's why we see in the whole thing that this aspect of Govindaji is the most important, because the activity, what you do with it, is more important. You know, because it means you have to have ingredients, you have to have the environment, you have to have all that, and so that's what's being taken care of. But then you have to do something with it. You understand? So you have as a background, it's the one thing. So then you're going to see is that background will be there, everything will be there, everything, all the ingredients of rasa will be there. Then the devotees will take those and do something with them. Like the kitchen is there, the bhoga is there, but then the devotees will do something with it. Is that?
Imagine any activities have two steps.
Yes, there's always these two. Yeah. So the efficient means you're taking the ingredients and through action transforming it into something that then gives a particular effect. So in Mahamaya, the effect is illusion. In Yogamaya, it is prema.
It's the same ingredient.
It's the same ingredient. It means here it'll be the same ingredients. In the spiritual world it'll be the same ingredients. Right? But the point is it's the consciousness that actually defines.
Yes.
Right? Because the demons, you can say, are in Vrindavan, but at the same time we know they're not in Vrindavan. They're there,
yes,
but by their consciousness they're not there. They're in the material world because they only see everything material. So they just see Krishna as ordinary and Vrindavan is just another village. You know, because they've come from Mathura and they've walked over there or flew over there, however they got there. And then, you know, for them it's just another place. It just happens to be where Krishna is, and he's just another ordinary god. So they're, by their consciousness, they're actually in the material world. So they're dealing with Mahamaya. But all the residents of Vrindavan and the devotees and Krishna, they're all dealing with Yogamaya. Because it's the same person. You know, so that's the whole point, is that sometimes we'll make so much of a scene about the place and this and that. It's the consciousness. So that's why here in the material phenomena, we can be fully Krishna conscious and we'll get the effect because Yoga Maya will arrange it. But the transformations of the things are happening through Mahamaya, still happening through the modes, because that's what she works with. But in the spiritual world, then you don't need the modes. They're all the different energies, they're transforming. Therefore, we have the Sambit, Sandini, Ladini, like this. And there, all these things are happening. So it's just a matter of, there's a simultaneous oneness and difference. It's the same thing, but then there's a difference. The effect is different. You know, it's the same, like he probably said, it's the same potency, but the potency can create heat and cold.
Yes.
So therefore, the same potency, the Sarup Shakti, you can get the spiritual world and you can get the material world. Does that make sense? You want to try something more far out?
No.
Good with that? Okay.
Good. The last explanation you gave sounded a little bit like the difference between potential energy and kinetic energy. Kinetic would be the material because that's actually something in motion, and potential being, you know.
Yeah, what you do with it. Yeah, it's just like you have the electricity sitting there, and then you turn on the light. Now it does performs. Yeah, because they go together. They go together. That's why they're non-different. That's why it's Advaita. They're non-different. But at the same time, as you do have this different aspect, he's representing a different aspect of the Lord, a particular feature. That's why he says an incarnation, a partial. And that partial is complete. He said a partial plenary. You know, it means he's complete in himself. He's Vishnu Tattva. There'll be a slight difference in mood. But at the same time, it's that mood is there in Mahavishnu. But the manifestation of that specific mood, that then here is Advaita Charya. So. Although the Shankya philosophy accepts that the material ingredients are the cause, the creation of the world never arises from dead matter, right? So you have the ingredients, and that's a cause, but you don't get the creation happening from that aspect of the cause. The Lord infuses the material ingredients with his own creative potency. That's the efficient. Then, by the power of the Lord, creation takes place. So that's why you also would say that Advaitacharya is serving the Lord, because then he is then the ingredients through which then the Lord will then perform his pastimes. Right? But at the same time, he's still the Lord who's doing that. So it's just, this is the fun. Right? So your general monotheistic personalities are not going to catch this stuff. Okay. Hence, chant Hare Krishna and be happy.
They have a hard enough time getting the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit as one.
Yeah, but that's a Greek philosophy, you know, so then, yeah, then on that side. Yeah true. Yeah. True. Srila Prabhupada, factually, the Supreme Absolute Truth is the cause of every kind of manifestation. And he is always complete, both as the energy and as the energetic. The cosmic manifestation is caused by the energy of the Supreme Absolute Person, in whom all energies are conserved. Philosophers are subjectively engaged in the cosmic manifestation. Philosophers who are subjectively engaged in the cosmic manifestation can appreciate only the wonderful energies of matter. See, philosophers who are subjectively engaged means they're going to start from their position. So they're going to induct or induce or
induce.
Like that, you know, whatever.
They're going to use induction.
So they're going to induce. Induced through their induction. But it's always going to be from the subjective platform. That's the thing, because they can't actually be objective until they see themselves in relationship with the Lord. Same guy again. Now we just have to see if the elephant's gone. The cause of manifestation is caused by the energy of the Supreme Absolute Person, in whom all energies are conserved. Okay, we got that. Such philosophers accept the conception of God only as a product of the material energy, because they only know what's going on here.
Yes.
And so they don't actually know the other aspect. They don't know the pradhan. And they don't know the Lord as the source of that pradhan. So then they'll say he's a product of here. Because they don't know where the product comes from. Yes.
Interesting point. Advaita Acharya has some followers that actually worship him as the Supreme and don't see the way to Lord Chaitanya. And what you were just saying there with the philosophers, if you're starting here, then that is the Supreme. Because you only see the material cause,
yes.
And that's Supreme.
Yes.
They don't understand that there's actually an efficient cause there.
Yes, yes. So they don't see that aspect. So those that see the other side and see how is a connection, they see him as the Acharya, meaning servant of Vishnu.
Yeah.
Or see him in his position as what he is. And the other, as Prabhupada just slightly mentioned it, then there are those who see the impersonal aspect.
Yeah, it'll come out more later.
Yeah, and so that impersonal aspect, they see that side of it, but they don't understand that it goes back farther. So they only see up to the point of the Brahman. So they basically get back to the ingredient, but they don't understand of how that's coming from Vishnu. Since materialistic philosophers and scientists are too much engaged with their imperfect senses, naturally they conclude that the living force is a product of material combination. Right? Because you have that and you just combine it, because all they know is this efficient cause. They don't know the ingredient cause. Right? So they're unaware of what's happening here. But the actual fact is just the opposite. Matter is a product of spirit. According to the Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Spirit, the Personality of Godhead, is the source of all energies. When one advances in research work by studying a limited substance within the limits of space and time, one is amazed by the various wonderful cosmic manifestations, and naturally one goes on hypothetically accepting the path of research work or the inductive method. Yeah, cool. Through the deductive way of understanding, however, one accepts the Supreme Absolute Person, the Personality of Godhead, as the cause of all causes. So are you quoting from here?
No.
No, okay.
It's from Bhagavad Gita.
Okay, yeah. So
Prabhupada mentions that.
Many times, yes. So it says, does that make sense? So the one you're starting from the Lord and then seeing everything in the context. The other is used, as we saw, that they'll use the inductive from the deductive perspective. Mm-hmm. When you're trying to get a living entity to understand and connect, but once they can bring him to the Lord, then you're going to apply the deductive. So that's the difficulty that comes up, is what we're not seeing is like, I'm preaching to someone else, I may be talking about Krishna, but I'm talking about it from my perspective, which is fine, but they're not trying to adjust to the perspective of the individual I'm talking to. Right? So just as I see it, what works for me, and I'm you know, already situated in devotional service, and I'm serious, and like that. So then that is called the hard preaching. Right? The other is that I'm taking also from my position, and then taking a little consideration of their position, but I'm trying to explain from their position, and then taking it up. But I'll only take it as far as they won't get disturbed. And so that's called the soft preaching. But you see, neither of them are actually dealing with the deductive method. They're both using the inductive. So that's the problem. So preaching means you may use that inductive simply so that you're explaining the deductive through inductive so that they can connect and relate to it. And as soon as it gets to that, then you can explain it properly. Right, fully, and then they themselves can see how to use inductive and deductive for themselves. So it's starting from the Lord, but you may be seeing my position, how I fit in. Right, so you're practically trying to see, you're applying. So that then preaching will come out that way. Otherwise, then it's missing the point. You know, it comes, you know, like that.
So Maharaj, can we say that preaching is also like two step, to know the ingredient of preaching and how to apply?
Yes. It means what's there and the persons you're dealing with, the environment and all that, but at the same time is it's all Krishna anyway, so you have to still from that place you can explain Krishna. But if we're looking at it, okay, well there's Krishna consciousness and that, and there's the kind of Indian scene and, you know, this tradition, but people are different, the world's different, and, you know, you can't say all these things and do all these things. They're not actually seeing how everything is Krishna, and that's the first point he makes in the Chaturshloki. It's all him. And the second point, if you don't think it's him, you're an illusion. Right? Then just to make it fun, then the third point he makes is, and yes, I am everything and all that, but I am beyond that, so it's not me also. Right? And then the next one is he says, and like that, both directly and indirectly, you're supposed to see him in all things, all places, all time, all circumstances. And so, therefore, four verses get explained through 18,000. Like that. Is that? Yeah. So it says, so you're going to have that, this aspect of how he is and everything and that's not being considered. And so it's being thought, so they're seeing it as in duality. So it's material. Well, there's Krishna consciousness, then there's the real world. Or the material world, or like this, but no, there's Krishna consciousness, and that's all there is. Then there's people who understand and appreciate that, and there's people who don't. You know, it's just like, let's say, you have a topic. There are people who know that topic, and people who don't. It's not that because people don't, the topic doesn't exist. Right. So, the whole thing is that the position that people are in and the modes that they're controlled by to be in that are still coming from Krishna, because he's the nimitta, he's the efficient cause. Right? So being that efficient cause, they are in that position and have that consciousness by Krishna's arrangement. It's their desire. Krishna's reciprocating with them. But the point is this, it's him that's doing it. He's the one that makes it, that they're sitting there and talking the way they do. It's by Krishna's potency to be able to talk that way. So that means, since it connects to Krishna, why can't you take whatever they are and then adjust it back and show them Krishna through it? Right? So you're using the inductive to establish the Krishna's position, the deductive. That's preaching. So then you have to take the individual. You have to know yourself, what you can do, and you have to know the others and what the position they're in. And then explain it.
You need to know.
Yes, so the more you see we understand this, the easier it becomes. Because otherwise, you know, we've been pointing out, you know, certain technical aspects of the hard and soft, meaning basically we're not connecting it to the individual properly. You know, one is by our perspective, one is their perspective, and it's not Krishna's perspective. But we see by this point that Prabhupada's just made here, then it's more than that. It's actually a philosophical approach. And so we can find fault in both of them because they're not actually the standard. Right? You know, that's you have, oh, is it hard for you? No, is it soft? Is that, no, but it can't be that. It has to be what is the proper thing for both. Because both of them are dealing with something. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's just, you see, is that what the acharyas are talking. And Prabhupada, just with simple language, he's talking such technical philosophy. But the words he's using are simple. It means he's using nice words, but generally we don't give it much, you know, credit. But, you know, when the acharyas will use some Sanskrit and things like this, then it's you know, respected from that point, from the scholarly point of view. But the point is whatever they've said, Prabhupada is saying. But sometimes to appreciate what Prabhupada is saying, then seeing the technical and seeing it from there, and then looking at the purport, then you understand, oh, that's what Prabhupada is saying. You know, like that. It is so clear. And the point, and the thing is to explain it to others and preach, you'll have to use what Prabhupada said, not what the acharyas said. Right? Because they don't know Sanskrit. So, it's not going to work.
But in Nota Kursa says Aroha and Avaroha. It's the exact same thing.
Yes.
But even I was trying to tell the student difference between deductive and they couldn't understand, so we had to look at the dictionary. Because when Prabhupada used to preach, people still knew those kind of terms.
Yes.
But nowadays, people, they don't
know. Yeah, they know. But the principle still works. You know, the subjective and then the objective means it's for Krishna. But it's actually a difference. It's subjective means from our point of view, and then the deductive is the subjectivity of Krishna.
Yeah.
So when we accept and surrender to Krishna's subjectivity, then it works. So we have subjectivity because he's the supreme subjective. Like that. And objectivity, that's Brahman.
A defined dictionary now.
Sorry?
It's a defined meaning in a defined dictionary.
Yes. Yes. Through the deductive way of understanding, however, one accepts the Supreme Absolute Person, the Personality of Godhead, as the cause of all causes, who is full with diverse energies and who is neither impersonal nor void. For one who does not understand the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his diverse energies, because of not knowing the relationship between the source of energies and the energies themselves, there is always a chance of error, which is known as vivarta. So they only study energies, they don't know the source of energies. Right? As long as materialistic scientists and philosophers do not come to the right conclusion, certainly they will hover above the material field, bereft of proper understanding of the absolute truth. Then, okay, then this one's in quotes. Why is that?
Trying to figure that out.
Okay, in any case, we'll read it while he figures it out. A Vedic injunction states, Sarve Veda Yat Padam Amananti, Katha Upanishad 1:2:15. All Vedic knowledge is searching after the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, another Vedic injunction states, Narayana Para Vedaha. The Vedas are meant for understanding Narayana. Since the speculation of the impersonalist does not follow the principles of the Vedas, their conclusion must be considered to be against the Vedic principles. Anything not supported by the Vedic principles must be considered imaginary and lacking in standard proof. Right? That's why we're not. It's like something that we're doing, if it happens to also coincide with something that the karmis accept, is that's also a bona fide thing. But it's not that you need the modern to confirm it. It's confirmed in its own. It's svarat. It's independent. But at the same time, if it's there, then it just gives an opportunity that you can use that to help convince others. But it's not that now that that's there, now we feel confident. No, it has to be very careful.
It's in the footnote tells you why it's in quotes. Actually, sorry about that.
Okay. Oh, it'll get down to the footnote. Okay. Therefore, no impersonalist explanation of any Vedic literature can be accepted. If someone presents an alternative doctrine he himself has manufactured, that doctrine will prove itself useless. So anything we come up with on our own, or you get out of the internet, it will come out to be useless. It's just a matter of time. It's just as the modes change, it'll become stupid. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. For any doctrine that tries to prove the Vedic evidence is meaningless immediately proves itself meaningless. Footnote 17. In the purport to text 15, Srila Prabhupada quotes Srila Baladeva Vibhushan's commentary on the Vedanta Sutra regarding the nature of pradhan. An excerpt of this citation is appended here in quotes. Okay, so this is Srila Prabhupada quoting Baladeva Vibhushan's commentary on that. Okay, to support this. Okay, cool.
So probably instead of a footnote, that should have been before the quote, since it's so long.
Ah, it could be. Yeah, you could even put it in a note, or even put, yeah. Oh, you mean put it right in the beginning?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, that could work. Is that good? You know, so that's why the inductive method is not supported. The deductive has to be used, because that then is based in the Vedic knowledge. So we always have to use that. And the others, they match nice, because it's everything. If they're observing Krishna's energy, they're going to see some pattern.
Yes.
You know, how much of the patterns they see, then that's another thing. But they'll see some pattern.
Yes.
And so then presenting philosophies based on that pattern, then it will have some truth to it. But the problem is, it's not seeing in context of the Lord, and they don't know actually what it's for, and so they'll try to see, you know, in other words, can they control people? Can you get controlled by it, or can you enjoy by it? That will be what you'll apply to anything they observe. If you can't do either of those, then it's pretty much of a waste of time. Yes?
Therefore, one Western philosopher said that every theory is involuntary and unconscious self-diagnosis of a disease, the person who came up with the theory.
Oh, okay.
So pretty much.
So he's diagnosing his own disease.
Also.
Yes. Yeah, that's far out. And it's fun is how even the materialists see these things,
yes,
but they don't know what to do with it. They can't see beyond. They just see it, but they don't know why it's like that. Or where, that's the fun part. So now and again you get...
Now, this is common if we observe the thing, but we are ignorant of the cause.
Yes,
because we're
only seeing the nimitta. We're not seeing the other. What's the other one called?
Upadana.
Huh? Upadana. Yeah, we're not seeing the upadana. Yeah. So they don't know how it works. But you know, so that's the difficulty. They're only seeing half of it.
Yes.
And so they don't understand how all this goes back to the Lord.
Yes.
And even if they accept the Lord, they don't know how this connects to the Lord. So, because many of these scientists who are quite successful, they're theists.
Yes.
And they accept the Lord. And so that for them, they're studying God's creation, but they can't explain how it connects to God. That's the whole thing. So if they took just leave out the bang part and some of the others, and then what they can observe themselves, and then connect that to, you know, the 7-day program, then they could, work it out. Yeah. But when you start the planets, you always start with sun, right? And then you go through the planets. So that means 6 days. So the 7th day, that's Saturn, and that's Saturday. Right? So that's how you come up with that program.
If you're starting with the sun, gotcha.
Yeah. So then, you know, and then I'm not sure if it's just to be different or something. Then they, you know, the Sundays. So that means you start with Monday. So then it's more mental, like that. You know, and then the others start with Saturn. You know, so then that's really going to come out strange. You know, it's really up and down. You know, so yeah, I mean, if you look at it, it actually makes sense. Yeah.
They also wanted to be different. You know,
they're
the third ones.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that then one is it's always up and down because of that, and the other one is more mental.
Maharaj. Regarding the last bit of this sentence here, any doctrine that tries to prove that Vedic evidence is meaningless immediately proves itself meaningless. I was reading a book, I won't say the name of it or who wrote it, it was a devotee, and he was saying that in Bhagavad Gita, every time the Vedas is brought up, it's always in a negative way, like the flowery language of the Vedas, and it's always like, you know, something that's trying to bait you to enjoy and get away from what our actual philosophy is. And so it seems sort of, you know, like this, we're trying to disprove what the Vedas is saying, but actually the Vedas is always bringing us to Krishna.
Yes, because that point is that you'll see that Prabhupada is going to do both, and because he does both immediately, then we don't necessarily always catch, but at the same time he's trying to stop certain things from happening. See, as let's say the acharyas, they may go on for a long time with a particular subject before they get to, you know, other aspects of that subject. So the weaknesses that may be there aren't dealt with until later. But then who is studying that? You know, who are the contemporaries? Who are the, you know, like this? So you have people who are very scholarly, so they can appreciate these things. And so they can focus for a long time on the subject, go into the depth of it like that, and they're not going to necessarily come to conclusions until they've gotten through. And then when it says later that, you know, you have to consider this and that, then they'll be fine. But for those who, you know, just see something and immediately jump to a conclusion, then you have to mention it at the same time. Right? So then Prabhupada will open with, you know, quite a standard kind of point that Prabhupada is making, is that human life begins with Varnashram. Like that. And so he'll then establish how, you know, it has to be based and this is what's used and everything like that. But then there's the problem, we'll get into Varnashram and think it's Varnashram that's making it happening. So then he's talking about you don't get distracted by all the things and that and the karma and all that. So therefore then, because that came afterwards, many devotees will come to the conclusion that Prabhupada's throwing it out. But he's throwing out misuse of it on the material platform. And the first one is how to properly use it connected to Krishna. So he'll give both. But we'll just see which one. You know, we're used to negative, so, you know, if you watch the news, all you know is negative, right?
Yeah. Well, we're binary. We either want to accept something or reject it. We don't want to understand it. We just want to
understand it? It's like, come on. You know, so.
Yeah, think about it.
No. That's so archaic. That went out with Socrates. Like, come on. You know, I mean, he thought, look what happened to him. You know, so, come on. Yeah, so it's a good point. They have to be very, very careful. Now, if we look at those who do put a lot of faith in that in the acharyas and kind of go that way, either the acharyas or, you know, some other form of approach to this in these kind of traditional ways. So if they approach that but not through the method that Prabhupada gave, and then taking advantage of the, you know, nice things that the acharyas are presenting, then you end up with these kind of like more scholarly Vedic guys, the more ritualistic kind of things, so things like that, which is exactly means. In other words, you know, it's like there's already, what is it, what are we up to now, 1.2 billion here? Or more?
More.
More.
In India?
Yeah. More. 3, 4?
No.
Just beyond, just put a plus. Okay. You know, you have enough Hindus. Right? You know, even if we remove the you know, how you say, other religions, you're still going to have above a billion. You know? Yeah. So the point is there's enough, but we don't need to make more. It's not the International Society for making more Hindus. Like that. So we don't need that. So that's what Prabhupada then gives, so that people don't get distracted in that way. So he has to say it immediately, but because that negative comes in, then a lot of times they don't catch between the two. Because if you don't, then you end up with the other. And so, you know, so that they have the faith, and so if they don't understand that they'll stick to what Prabhupada said, then they'll do okay. But those who don't stick to what Prabhupada said and don't accept the Vedic, they got a problem.
Yes.
So that's why I always make a distinction between basically those from, you know, that joined 69 and before. Because it's like, if Prabhupada didn't say it, they didn't see Prabhupada do it, they're just not going to accept. There's Varnash, they don't understand it because it wasn't happening right then, because they were personally associated with Prabhupada. And so for them, they're just so Prabhupada conscious, it doesn't matter. It will work for them because they'll just do that. And then later is then when we start seeing these other kind of things that, you know, like that. In the form of Advaita, he infuses the material ingredients with a creative energy. Therefore, Advaita is the original cause of creation. Sri Advaitacharya is the creator of millions and millions of universes. And by his expansions, as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, he maintains each and every universe. Sri Advaita is the principal limb, Anga, of Narayana. Srimad Bhagavatam speaks of limb, Anga, as a plenary portion, Amsa, of the Lord. Quote, O Lord of Lords, you are the seer of all creation. You are indeed everyone's dearest life. You are not, therefore, are you not, therefore, my father, Narayana. Narayana refers to one whose abode is in the water, born from Nara, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And that Narayana is your plenary portion. All your plenary portions are transcendental. They are absolute and not creations of Maya. Footnote 18. This is text from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.14. Yes, it comes up a lot. Yeah, and from different angles. That's the far out thing. That's the uniqueness of the traditional method, is that they don't mind quoting the same verse many, many times because they're bringing out different angles. Or it may be in a different angle, the same principle that's in another, so they'll quote it. Either way. Well, we'll tend to, oh, we already used that, now we have to use another one. You know, so, but we don't, yes.
It's amazing that this verse to establish position of Lord Chaitanya was used.
Yes.
Then Nityananda, that was used. And now we have the exact same verse
for Dvaitacharya. Yeah. Because that's the thing. They're non-different, but they're different. So that's the whole thing. This verse describes that the limbs and plenary portions of the Lord are all spiritual. Because the one was showing that who is the source of all that, who is actually functioning and running, you know, managing all that, and then who is also then an Anga of that. So, does that make sense? So the beginning is Lord Chaitanya, the middle is Nityananda, and the end is Advaitacharya. Amen. Okay. This verse describes that the limbs and plenary portions of the Lord are all spiritual. They have no relationship with the material energy. Why has Sri Advaita been called a limb and not a part? The reason is that a quote-unquote limb implies greater intimacy. Sri Advaita, who is a reservoir of virtues, is the main limb of Mahavishnu. His full name is Advaita, for he is identical in all respects with that Lord. As he had formerly created all the universe, now he descended to introduce the path of bhakti. He delivered all living beings by offering the gift of Krishna bhakti. He explained the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in the light of devotional service. So it's when you can see this non-difference that it starts to make sense. But at the same time, you can tell the difference. Like Mahavishnu is there. He does all these things. But what's the... He is Vishnu. That means all the qualities, everything are there in him. But the specialty, or the, you know, the Visesha aspect of the Purusha avatars is they're working with material energy. Like that. Because before them, no one works with material energy because there isn't any. You know, or there's no manifestation. But they're working. So that aspect of that creation, the whole thing like that, that's then the aspect you could say is that limb, because it doesn't take all of the aspects of Vishnu to do that. But at the same time, as then Advaitacharya, who is that limb, is complete in himself. That's why it says plenary portion. Plenary means complete.
Yes.
Like that. Is that...
Yeah.
My brain is sufficiently blown.
It makes more sense.
It makes more sense now. Yes, that's where we go. I mean, we're just at the beginning of the chapter. It's 120 verses, so... You know. Yes.
Well, can we say also that since the goal of the creation is to bring the living entity back to Godhead,
yes.
So Advaita Acharya, by his activity and prayers, is helping.
Yes. Yeah, it said there that he himself, he creates the universe, and now he descended to introduce the path of bhakti.
Yes.
And so, by introducing the path of bhakti, he's preaching it, but no one's taking it. Because he's Vishnu, so he can only, you know, only as you surrender, he can then he'll reciprocate. No one's surrendering, right? So, therefore, he calls Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right? So in that way, then he's the, you know, the ingredient of cause. But then it's Lord Chaitanya actually then makes it work. So he's that background and how everything's there, and then, you know, so all the situations, and then Lord Chaitanya does it. So we see here is that there will be. Now, maybe this may be where we see sometime where there may be a, we will try this, a confusion, because generally we're taking it that we take the column, you know, most of the other explanations, then the column itself is the material energy, right? So that's the external, that's the feminine aspect. Oh no, it still works out the same. We just haven't looked at it from this angle. The column is yeah, okay, no, I get it here. Yeah. Then you're taking it that you're going to have the, and then the Lord pervades that through his energies. Mm-hmm. Right? But the thing is then it's the energies, but at the same time it's still Krishna. So Krishna is the Purush, but through his energies he's dealing, and then this other energy is then taking the passive role. But then the other energies, they make the dynamic, so that makes the masculine. Does that make sense?
So feminine is dynamic, actually.
It has that aspect of dynamic, but that dynamism is dependent upon the masculine as a support. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know, because here, then it's service to Krishna, and then it's doing. But the point is you have the passive and the aspect. So that's where you see those two aspects. The upadana, in one sense, is the passive. And then you have the dynamic of making it happen. But at the same time, as those ingredients are made into things, and then the illusion that comes with that, and the potencies that make that work, right? Then you know, has that masculine aspect. But at the same time, is that the pradhan doesn't do anything, and then by Advaita Acharya, it's now being able to produce and do all these things. So that takes on the masculine. So that's the point. Is that it's non-different, but it's just a matter of how it's being brought out. Does that make sense? But there'll be always be a consistency. It's just you guys have to go deeper into it to see. That got anywhere or no?
So earlier when you said over here in one of the texts that Vishnu is the nimitta and Advaita is the upadan, material cause. So now we can further ahead, you know, we're just saying it and expanding it that Advaita Acharya is basically the nimitta, and then Maya becomes the upadhan. That way, it just goes on like that.
It means, Cam, it's just a matter, that's a different angle that you're looking at, because right now we're looking at the connection between Mahavishnu and Advaita Acharya. Mm-hmm. That the aspect of Advaita Acharya is a limb of Mahavishnu, because he's creating the whole thing, but then you have to have the material energy that's going to be transformed. So that aspect is dealing with that, so therefore that aspect of the creation, that's Advaita Acharya. But how he's pervading everything and making it work, and how the Jiva Maya, that will be Mahavishnu, because Mahavishnu is dreaming all this. You understand? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So both aspects of Maya means it has to be supported. Right? So the Jiva Maya has to be supported. So that's supported by Mahavishnu. And then the Upadana aspect of Maya, and how all these things can be made into things, that's going to be Advaita Acharya. Because the illusion is not the thing itself. It's the potency behind it. Like, have we ever had the experience where there's some item, you know, some form of some item or some concept of that, and we're really enamored by it, And then with time, or either with time or someone mentions something or working with it or whatever it is, we then look at this again.
Yes.
And we just think, why did we ever get into that? What, because that Jiva Maya is not there now.
Yes.
In that aspect. We're just seeing it for what it is. We're just seeing it as Upadana.
I guess it's called marriage at the stage of Vanaprastha.
Exactly. That will be the complete form, all encompassing, all aspects of that. So in other words, everything that you thought in between, that's really good. Yeah, we should go on the Caribbean cruise and all that, and then you come back with a million mosquito bites and, you know, running away from those piranhas and stuff like that. Then you think, that was kind of stupid. But then it becomes just Upadana, right? So when you've done all that, you know, what is it? What is the thing? When you've seen all that there is to be seen, you know, then one surrenders to the Lord. You know, kind of, yeah. So yes, Vanaprastha is the... So seeing is that, because there's the two aspects, is not that the transformation and all that of the things, but that's the whole point, is that it can all be created. But why is it being created? Is for the living entities and that illusion that they're in. So you have those two aspects. Does that make sense? So it's just, yeah. He explained the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in the light of devotional service. He delivered all living entities by offering the gift of Krishna Bhakti. He explained the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in the light of devotional service. Srila Prabhupada. Although Sri Advaita Prabhu is an incarnation of Vishnu, for the welfare of the conditioned souls, he manifested himself as the servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and throughout all his activities he showed himself to be an eternal servitor. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda also manifested the same principle. Although they belong to the category of Vishnu, if Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and Dvaita Prabhu had exhibited their all-powerful Vishnu potencies within this material world, people would have become greater impersonalists, monists, and self-worshippers than they had already become under the spell of this age. Therefore, the personality of Godhead in his different incarnations and forms played the parts of devotees to instruct the conditioned souls how to approach the transcendental state of devotional service. Right? Because they're already impersonalists, so here's more God that's just impersonal. But when they show devotion to God in that process, then they'll take it up. Therefore, Acharya. Right? Because you see, up to this point, he's been called Advaita, Sri Advaita. He's known as Advaita, like that. But here's then probably starting Advaita Prabhu, Advaita Acharya. Cause so it comes out that he's the servant. So
this also previously mentioned Bhakta Rupa, Bhakta Swarupa, and then Bhakta Avatar.
Yes.
So it's all in that form, not as Ishvara as such.
Yes, yes. Because even Lord Chaitanya is taking the mood of the devotee. And because of this, because they're all taking the moods of the devotees, but it may be Lord Chaitanya is the mood of the devotee of Radha and Krishna, and a Nityananda and a Dvaita, then they're devotees of Lord Chaitanya. But they're also worshipping Radha and Krishna, because they're all expanding from Krishna, like that. So all of them are taking the mood. Then 29. Since he has no other occupation than to teach devotional service, his name is the Dvaita Acharya. He is the spiritual master of all devotees and is the most revered personality in the world. By a combination of these two names, his name is Advaita Acharya. Sri Advaita Acharya is the prime spiritual master of the Vaishnavas, and he is worshipable by all Vaishnavas. Vaishnavas must follow in the footsteps of the Advaita Acharya, for by so doing, one can actually engage in the devotional service of the Lord. So, then he being the prime spiritual master of the Vaishnavas, so then through the account, so then, yes, so that makes sense. So you're already getting that aspect of the spiritual master, then the Lord in that position, and yes. And even if, yeah. Since he is a limb or part of the lotus-eyed Supreme Lord, he also bears the name Kamalaksha. His associates have the same bodily features as the Lord. They all have four arms and are dressed in yellow garments like Narayana. Sri Advaitacharya is the principal limb of the Supreme Lord. His truths, names, and attributes are all wonderful. He worshipped Krishna with tulsi leaves and water of the Ganges and called for him in a loud voice. Thus, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared on earth, accompanied by his personal associates. It is through him, Advaitacharya, that Lord Chaitanya spread the Sankirtan movement, and through him that he delivered the world. The glory and attributes of Advaitacharya are unlimited. How can the insignificant living entities fathom them? Sri Advaitacharya is the principal limb of Lord Chaitanya. Another limb of the Lord is Nityananda Prabhu. The devotees headed by Srivas are his smaller limbs. They are like his hands, face, and eyes, and his disc and other weapons. With all of them, Lord Chaitanya performed his pastimes, and with them he spread his mission. Thinking, he, Sri Advaitacharya, is a disciple of Sri Madhavendra Puri. Lord Chaitanya obeys him, respecting him as his spiritual master. Because he's a god-brother of the spiritual master. It also comes up, this is some place where it talks about the tree?
Yeah.
That's coming? Or
yeah, there's
like that.
Three chapters.
Okay, so then, yeah, so it's the tree. So then he's a major limb, so it'll make the most sense there.
Yeah.
And then here he said, you know, there's Lord Chaitanya, then he's a limb, Lord Nityananda is the other, and then the others are smaller limbs,
yeah,
like that. So they're coming off of these. Srila Prabhupada. Sri Madhavendra Puri is one of the acharyas in the disciplic succession of Madhva Acharya. Madhavendra Puri had two principal disciples, Ishwara Puri and Sri Advaita Prabhu. Therefore, the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is a succession from Madhvacharya. This fact has been accepted in the authorized books known as Gauraganudesh Deepika and Premier Ratnavali, as well as by Gopal Guru Goswami. The Gauraganudesh Deepika 22 clearly states that the disciplic succession of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas as follows. Lord Brahma is the direct disciple of Vishnu, the Lord of the spiritual sky. His disciple is Narada. Narada's disciple is Vyasa, and Vyasa's disciples are Sukadeva Goswami and Madhvacharya. Padmanabhacharya is the disciple of Madhvacharya, and Narahari is the disciple of Padmanabhacharya. Madhva is the disciple of Narahari. Akshobhya is the direct disciple of Madhva, and Jayatirtha is the disciple of Akshobhya. Jayatirtha's disciple is Gyanasindhu, and his disciple is Mahanidhi. Vidyanidhi is the disciple of Mahanidhi, and Rajendra is the disciple of Vidyanidhi. Jayadharma is the disciple of Rajendra. Purushottama is the disciple of Jayadharma. Sriman Lakshmipati is the disciple of Vyasatirtha, who is the disciple of Purushottama. And Madhavendra Puri is the disciple of Lakshmipati. To maintain the proper etiquette for the principles of religion, Lord Chaitanya bows down at the lotus feet of Sri Advaitacharya with reverential prayers and devotion. Sri Advaitacharya, however, considers Lord Chaitanya Prabhu his master, and he thinks himself as a servant of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Prabhupada. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Srila Rupa Goswami explains the super excellent quality of devotional service as follows. If multiplied billions of times, the transcendental pleasure derived from impersonal Brahman, Brahman realization, still could not compare to even an atomic portion of the ocean of bhakti. Right? Here's another making it even smaller. This is where I say, okay, if you take the Ananda of Brahmananda, so it's only a fractional portion of a drop compared to the ocean.
Yeah.
Right? So you get, but here it says, you multiply it by, okay, so what did you say?
Billions
of times, then it still won't even compare to an atomic portion of the ocean. So before it just said, you know, it's a fraction of a portion of a drop. But when it, but now here Rupa Goswami is explaining that fraction of a portion of a drop.
Yeah.
You know, you take that fact and multiply it by billions of times, and it still doesn't come to
yeah.
that. Yeah.
magnify it just so you could compare it to the smallest portion of it.
Yeah, just so you could kind of get the relation. But now it's like really. Yeah. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.38. Similarly, the Bhavartika Deepika. Bhavarta Deepika. That's Sridhar Swami. Right? Yeah. For those who take pleasure in the transcendental topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the four progressive realizations of religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, all combined together, cannot compare any more than a straw could to the happiness derived from hearing about the transcendental activities of the Lord. So you take all these four together, and it's no more than a straw in the street compared to the happiness derived from transcendental suffering. Those who engage in the transcendental service of the lotus feet of Krishna, being relieved of all material enjoyment, have no attraction to topics of impersonal monism. In the Padma Purana, in connection with the glorification of the month of Kartik, it is stated that devotees pray, "Dear Lord," Prabhupada is quoting Srila Rupa Goswami. Prabhupada is quoting here then Sridhar Swami to explain the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He's bringing in a quote. And within that, then Sridhar Swami is then bringing in a quote. "Dear Lord, always remembering your childhood pastimes at Vrindavan is better for us than aspiring to merge into the impersonal Brahman. During your childhood pastimes, you liberated the two sons of Kuvera and made them great devotees of your lordship. Similarly, I wish that instead of giving me liberation, you may award me such devotion unto you." In the Haya Shirshya Shri Narayana Vyuha Stava, in the chapter called Narayana Stotra, it is stated, "My dear Lord, I do not wish to become a man of religion or a master of economic development or sense gratification, nor do I wish for liberation. Although I can have all these from you, the supreme bestower of benedictions, I do not pray for any of these. I simply pray that I may always be engaged as a servant of your lotus feet." End quote. Nrisimhadev offered Prahlad Maharaj all kinds of benedictions, but Prahlad Maharaj did not accept any of them, for he simply wanted to engage in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. Similarly, a pure devotee wishes to be blessed like Maharaj Prahlad by being thus endowed with devotional service. Devotees also offer their respects to Hanuman, who always remained a servant of Lord Ram. The great devotee Hanuman prayed, "I do not wish to take liberation or to merge in the Brahman effulgence, where the conception of being a servant of the Lord is completely lost." End quote. Similarly, the Narada Pancharatra is stated, "I do not want any of the four desirable stations. I simply want to engage as a servant of the lotus feet of the Lord." End quote. Kulashekar, in his famous book Mukunda Mala Stotra, prays, "My dear Lord, I do not worship you to be liberated from this material entanglement, nor do I wish to save myself from the hellish condition of material existence, nor do I ever pray for a beautiful wife to enjoy in a nice garden. I only wish that I may always be in full ecstasy with the pleasure of serving your lordship." MM4. Mukundamala Stotra. In Srimad Bhagavatam, also there are many instances in the third and fourth cantos in which the devotees pray to the Lord simply to be engaged in his service and nothing else. Right? So then that's the standard thing, is that being engaged in the Lord. So if we see that, then we think we can will surrender.
It's funny how he prays, "I don't want this, I only want full ecstasy."
Pure devotion service. Yeah, yeah, because that's the real thing. Because the others are like straw in the street. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai
Nitai Gaura Premanandi.